First case on our calendar, 03-1229, EOP BP Tower versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. Mr. Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. I am James Hewitt, the third counsel for the appellant, Cleveland Municipal School District Board of Education. Mr. Chief Justice, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. Thank you. Your Honors, this is a direct appeal from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals. The issue is not jurisdictional, as you considered in your Sharon Village versus Licking County decision, or even a matter where a local board of revision failed to notify the tax commissioner, as in CEI versus Lake County Board of Revision. It's a valuation case. It was issued originally in December of 2001, and it involves the parcel known as the BP building and the adjacent parking garage. We had a multi-day hearing in September of 2000, and two appraisers testified, Richard Rasick for the Board of Education and Roger Ritley for the property owner. Unfortunately, this case was dismissed in November of 2002 because the local Board of Revision did not certify its decision to the tax commissioner pursuant to your ruling in Cleveland Electric Illuminating versus Lake County. It was remanded, and it was later then certified to the tax commissioner. The property owner appealed again, and on June 20, 2003, the Board of Tax Appeals issued an identical decision. This case involves the 1997 tax year, and as you should know, this is the first year of the triennium in Cuyahoga County. I'd like to orient you regarding certain significant facts. The subject property is located in Public Square, which should be no surprise is the hub of Cleveland's Central Business District. The bus transportation from our Regional Transit Authority at Public Square radiate from this location. The Central Business District is the bulk of the city's most intense development.
Council, why is this anything other than reweighing the credibility of the two appraiser reports? I mean, when I went through your brief, you just seem to be arguing that we should believe your appraiser's report over the other. And that's, you know, there's a lot of deference we give to them as the fact finder. Why is this anything other than simply reweighing who is credible?
Your Honor, you have an obligation to determine that there is probative evidence. And we submit and that the Board of Tax Appeals did not adequately explain how it determined the valuation for the subject property by accepting the report of Mr. Ritley.
But when I read the report, they went to quite a bit of detail explaining that. They explained that, you know, the advertised rent is not what the property actually rents for, so they rejected your appraiser relying on advertised rent. They analyzed all the different aspects that went into a lease and the build-outs and that sort of thing, and why they felt that the appraiser for one side was more, I mean, there was a sort of a detailed analysis of why they rejected yours. Your report says they rejected it wholesale with no explanation, but I found lots of explanations. So do we have to go point by point by point and accept your version versus
Absolutely
theirs?
Not, Your Honor. And I hope my brief didn't lead you to that conclusion. I mean, you do have two appraisal reports, Mr. Ritley and Mr. Rasick. We submit that there's a critical element within Mr. Ritley's report and the decision itself. I mean, for example, the report says that 1875 is the average economic rent that he apportions for the building for the 1997 tax year. At that point, though, he then says that he's using $18.22 as economic rent. You will recall that in 1996, in September, this building sold for $144 million.
But both sides agreed that that was not an arm's length transaction and we should not consider it.
The county auditor kept that valuation, and I agree. We evaluate the factors that go on between the balancing between the two appraisers. As part of that sale, BP leased back 370,000 square feet at below market rates, $12 a square foot, Your Honor. So the challenge for the different appraisers is to apportion economic rent for that BP space. Mr. Ritley determines an average of $18.75 per square foot. He then lowers that to $18.22 because he asserts that the economic rent for the BP space is only $16 a square foot. And we would submit that for the second most prominent building in Public Square, clearly Class A, where the adjacent building next door, Key Tower, had asking rents of $33 a square foot.
But again, asking rents aren't what they rent for. You can see that. So
absolutely not.
You can't say, oh, it should have been 33, correct?
I would submit
to you.
What
is the figure your appraiser gives it?
For the BP space, $19 a square foot. But, you know.
But then why do you keep citing 33 when your appraiser only really gives 19?
Again, you're right, Your Honor. Asking rent is 33. You never get what you ask for. You negotiate downward. Mr. Rasick, our appraiser, says $19 a square foot. We would submit to you that that 53-cent difference that Mr. Ritley determined to be proper is a factor that this court should consider. You might say that that's not material to an argument, but we would submit that when you take 53 cents, the difference between 1875 and 1822, you times that time, you multiply that by the $1.2 million square footage within the subject, you divide that by the capitalization rate, that's $5.6 million in value.
Well, counsel, your focus is it all on the rent rate of
yes, Justice Feinberg.
The two appraisers. So, for example, the market cap rate, that's not written in stone. There isn't some place that you look that up. You don't even contest that.
That's correct.
Both appraisers
come in. Both appraisers had equally similar capitalization rates. They had equally similar expenses.
Because, I mean, if you jiggle that number a little bit, it can affect things tremendously.
So, it can.
So you're telling us the appraisers both came to the conclusion as to the cap rate.
That's right.
And that's an arbitrary number.
Yes, it is.
Totally arbitrary.
But they were both gleaned from the marketplace, so we have no challenge regarding the capitalization rates. We do have a challenge on that 53-cent difference. And you can use Mr. Ritley's capitalization rate. We would say, again, that's $6 million.
Is the dispute principally a function of the locked-in rates that BP has established for itself?
I think both appraisers agreed that as part of the sale, BP negotiated a sweetheart lease, Justice Pfeiffer, $12 a square right. foot, and for Class A space on Public Square, everyone agrees that's a sweetheart.
They own the building, so they can do that. If you want to buy the building, this is part of the deal.
Appraiser had to determine what is a proper economic rent for that space. And again, being on our public square in Cleveland, the most prominent area where all the transportation is emanating from, all the local businesses, to apportion $16, and then to say my average is $18.75, and oh by the way, BP space is only $16, so I'm using an $18.22 figure. That's not in evidence. There's nothing in the report that explains why we take $18.75 and instead use an $18.22 figure. And that's the reason why, if there's no probative evidence, we know that your challenge as a Supreme Court is to determine whether it's lawful and reasonable. If there's no evidence, you have to reverse. I mean, this is similar to the challenge that you had in the Citizens Financial versus Porterfield Tax Commissioner case. Where there's no probative evidence to support a BTA's finding, you're required to reverse. Again, there's no adequate explanation. Same as the Howard versus Board of Revision case. If there's no adequate explanation.
Well, counsel, in Howard, wasn't it true that the Board of Tax Appeals rejected the appraiser's evaluation and really came up with a figure and it was undisclosed on how they had.
Correct.
They didn't receive
Correct.
Any evidence that that was cited in their report or any computations that would have allowed the Board of Tax Appeals to arrive at that figure.
Absolutely.
So and isn't that distinguished from what we have here, where we have two competent appraisers citing economic rent and valuation here, agreeing on the same basis, just coming up with a different dollar amount, and not that substantially different.
But I think the central kernel of Howard is that you have to adequately explain how you reach your decision. Admittedly, in Howard, the Board of Tax Appeals came to a figure. It was much higher than a sales price.
Well, wouldn't it be fair to say that what they did was look at the two appraisals, and instead of pulling something out of one and something out of another, or or averaging like a jury might do, they made a conclusion that they found one appraisal to be more credible than the other. In other words, they chose, I mean, isn't it clear that they chose to go with the appraisal offered by the building owner, and then made an adjustment, did they not?
They certainly did.
For?
Lump sum deductions, which are inappropriate pursuant to hotel staff.
Right, so that would indicate that they went over the appraisal with some care, would it not?
Typically, Your Honors, it's a balancing between the two appraisers. However, we have to, when you review this particular...
I mean, typically, what you're arguing for is you throw the two up and average...
No, absolutely not, absolutely not. I think there's no basis for the $1,822 square foot rent that Mr. Ritley determines. And again, I submit to you that you have the ability to right now to modify this report, add in that 53 cents, and say enter a value of $123 million for the subject for that particular tax year. You have that ability now. What is clear is, though, is that when the Board of Tax Appeals decision, it of course, you've got your sales approach, you've got your income approach. Both appraisers evaluate the same five sales. The report criticizes Mr. Rasek's handling of the sales approach, but makes no mention whatsoever of what Mr. Ritley's sales approach is doing. And that goes to my second point. It seems as though they've reached this decision by the process of elimination. First it rejects Mr. Rasek, then it rejects Mr. Rasek's opinion of economic rent. And again, you can't conclude whether or not the BTA agreed or disagreed with Ritley's sales comparison approaches. There's no comment. Therefore, all that's left is Mr. Ritley, and so therefore I don't like Rasek, I'll accept Ritley, and that's it. It's a conclusionary statement. There's not an adequate explanation, and for that reason, we think that that technique is proper and therefore should be reversed. Remand for more information.
When you say sales approach, I thought they focused on the income
they
approach
sure did.
To appraisal.
They sure did. They
rejected the sales approach all the way around.
They did not accept the sales approach of either appraiser.
Okay, so why does it matter what they thought of one sales
approach
versus the
other? You would think that if you have two appraisers and they all are following the same approach, that if you're critiquing Mr. Rasek, where's a comment, either praise or criticism against Mr. Ritley? There's absolutely no comment regarding Mr. Ritley regarding his sales approach. We think that they criticize Rasek's sales, they criticize Rasek's opinion of economic rent. All that's left is Ritley, so we'll accept Ritley.
But it said in its report that the income approach offered by Ritley was competent evidence. Isn't that something that was a finding by them that we really can't get inside of?
We would submit that they never made a finding that $16 a square foot for that BP space is competent probative evidence. And that's the focus that we ask this court to pay its particular attention to. There's no finding regarding $16. And again, those of you, and I wanted to explain to you regarding, again, Public Square, $16 a square foot in the second most prominent building within the square is clearly out of line. Clearly out of line, and as such, you have the ability to make that adjustment now. Your Honors, you have a responsibility when an appeal is brought under 5717.04 to hear the arguments of the counsel, to consider the record and evidence, and determine if the Board of Tax Appeals decision was reasonable and lawful. We're requesting that you reverse this decision and vacate the BTA decision, and first modify it by using $1,875 a square foot, the average economic rent determined by Mr. Ritley for the subject, and determine a value of, say, $123 million. Alternatively, we're asking that you remand this case to the Board of Tax Appeals to state what evidence it considered relevant in reaching its conclusions. I mean, what is clear is that the BTA decision here does not adequately explain its thought process in reaching its conclusion. We submit that they reached this conclusion solely on the process of elimination. This is contrary to law and should be ordered reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hewitt. Mr. Jennings.
May it please the court, my name is Kieran Jennings, and I represent the Appley EOP BP Tower LLC. I'd like to start off by giving a brief bit of history, the valuation of this subject property. In 1994 through 96, the original fair market value on this property was $158 million. For the 1994 through 96 triennial, there was a stipulation that was entered into by BP, the then owner, and the Cleveland Board of Education in Cuyahoga County. That stipulation was for 1994, $110 million, for 95 and 96, $117.5 million. The reason this is even more pertinent is that for the first time in my history, and you can see how old I am, I've been doing this for about 12 years, only doing valuation cases, and not once had I ever seen a confirmation hearing on a stipulation, nor have I since that time seen a confirmation hearing on a stipulation. At that confirmation hearing, the chief attorney examiner and the board members heard evidence for 2 hours. They had appraisal evidence. They had evidence that was brought in from BP regarding the sale, and they discussed the rents, how the rents were obtained, et cetera. In 2000 through 2002, the Board of Revision for that triennial found for a decision of $117.8 million as well, and that was not appealed by any party. The case at hand is the 1997 through 1999 triennial, where the Board of Tax Appeals found for $117.8 million. I bring that up again because one of the arguments that was presented in the appellant's brief was that there was that there could be inconsistencies with the Board of Tax Appeals decision. As you can see from just the valuation history, within that, there's consistency externally. Internally, there's tremendous consistency as well. There's plenty of evidence, has already been discussed today, with regard to rents, with regard to the sales.
Well, isn't Mr. Hewitt's point that for a building on Public Square in downtown Cleveland, $16 a square foot is below market value? Isn't that really, when we're talking about the income approach to valuation of real estate, nothing's renting at $16 a square foot in downtown Cleveland on Public Square?
That actually is
I think that's his point, if I'm...
Yeah, that's his point, but it's not accurate. Rents actually in the area, and this was within Mr. Rasick's appraisal, range from $15.28 to $17.55. There's a number of different corridors in Cleveland. There is Public Square. There's also 9th Street. It's not exactly a Manhattan. It's not that big of a town that being in Public Square or being at the corner of 9th and Euclid is somehow a significantly different marketplace. One of the things that is important to bring out about the rents and the $16 a square foot is the fact that it was determined on a suite by suite basis. Mr. Ridley, in accordance with this court's decision in Dublin Senior Housing, looked at the property as it existed as of tax lien date. That means that the property has to look at, the appraiser has to look at how the property is configured. We're talking about large floor plates in the BP Tower. You could have $30 a square foot rent for small space. You could have $20 a square foot space, even within the BP tower, on a floor plate. But if you look at it, the finish of it, the location, where it falls in the stacking plan, as you move up that tower, rents do increase. When you're further down, the rents aren't as great. He went suite by suite, and he found, and he had a range of $16 a square foot to $26 a square foot in his rents that he applied to the building itself. So even though there ends up with this average of $18.22, that is what it is. It's an average. You have several large users that have back office space, which isn't nearly as nice. Specifically, the BP space is taking up some 300,000 square feet of this 1.2 million square foot building. So you have an awful, awful lot of back office. And back office space just isn't as luxurious as the executive suites. But he went through each and every bit of space and determined that rent. And that's one of the key aspects that the Board of Tax Appeals focused on when finding that Mr. Ritley's rental rates for the BP tower were most appropriate.
Counsel, I assume in arriving at value, there also, you have to, or do you not, have to look at the term of the lease for the existing tenants. For example, you've got the BP space. I don't know how long the building owner is committed. There's something in the briefs about some LTV space that was $4.48. Was that still rented out at that time? Was that a long-term commitment? How does that all get factored in determining the taxable value?
Well, in determining the taxable value, it's not as much of a factor. In determining the value on the street, if you were to go to sell it, it would have a tremendous factor. And therein is the difference between
It would drive it down, those under market
rents. It would, or it could. Okay? The issue that you have to look at is whether it is market or contract rent. And what Mr. Ritley did and what Mr. Rasich did is they didn't disregard the expenses that are being generated from the building. And they didn't wholly discount what the rents were, but they looked to the market to determine whether the rents in place met market.
So essentially, the income approach as used by these appraisers is a market income rather than giving much regard to the actual income and how long the building owner is locked into that.
That is correct.
So that's artificial as well.
It is.
It's devoid of reality because the building owner has got to live with the income it's generating that they're locked into, and they've got to live with that if they're saying, well, this is intolerable. They go to sell it, the next person's got to live with that as well.
I would agree. And in the confirmation hearing that the Board of Tax Appeals had, one of the discussions was if BP had not leased back that space, they looked to the market to see what they could actually get for the property, and it was $80 million. Okay? So even though this was the $12 contract rent is perceived
because
to be...
It would put too much empty space on the property.
Now, the reason that the appraisers are going to the market is that the body of case law that we have in Ohio currently mandates that we look to the market rents and not entirely rely upon the leased fee. And that is the difference, is that if you looked at what's currently in place, you have a leased fee, and they could be older rents, they could be whatever. And the property would potentially change.
Well, that's part of what I'm trying to probe, because I'm not certain that our case law is really quite fair or on target in that regard, where it forces a disregard of the true economic conditions that a property finds itself in due to commitments made by prior owners or the existing owner.
I don't want to presuppose and go outside of the decision that was with the Board of Tax Appeals, but within the record, there was a breakdown of the sale that was based on, because sellers and buyers in the marketplace, they don't care about Ohio law saying that it must be market rent or contract rent or anything. What they care about is, what's it worth to me? And there's a breakdown of how that sale actually was culminated and broke out the separate items. There was a multitude of different items in this property. One of the unique aspects of this property is it has generators that are capable of selling electricity back to the grid. And regularly they do that. So these are things that are backed out of the real estate. So to answer your question, the reason they did what they did is because current Ohio law mandates that. The interesting thing is that if, notwithstanding the difference between the contract rent and the market rent, you arrive at pretty close to the same number. And that's by and large where the stipulated value of $117.5 million
was
obtained.
When you say the contract rent, that would be an approach in which you took the existing contracts and the tail on those and blend that in with what the market might bring you for the space that is not committed
or readily to turn over and whatnot.
Soon to be available for an increase in rent.
Exactly. In this particular instance, the decision is still going to end up in the same spot.
Where the decision ended up seems to be the crux of our problem here, and I heard Mr. Hewitt say that the Board of Tax Appeal arrived at the $18.22 per square foot with no foundation, that they didn't, it's maybe a hybrid number. He stated that it's inexplicable on how they came up with that number. And what is not quite as inexplicable as the Howard case scenario, but how would you address that?
Well, both appraisers went to the market, and both appraisers found that the actual rental rates that were being culminated at that time ranged from $15.28 to $17.55. That's what their ranges were. And that's from both appraisers looking at the actual market. And what he did is he just simply went through, by the way, that's for large space, mm-hmm. the 15 through the 17. And he went through each of the suites and how it ranked in the stacking order, layout, finish, et cetera, and determined what that rent should be. That was the one of the last sentences was even discussed about it, is that these market rents range from $16 for the BP space to $26. The methodology is a probative development of the market rent. And if I may, I'd like to address the one other
Counsel,
aspect.
Getting back to my question to you, would you agree that the $18.22 was pulled out of the air or was not something that was founded had a foundation in the appraiser's report, that it's a figure that the Board of Tax Appeals came up with on their own?
No, it is not. It's actually just math. If you have certain suites at $16, $20, $14, whatever, all throughout, and that's exactly what was done. When you came to the end of the day and you divided it all by a million two square feet, that's what the $18.22, that's just math.
Okay, thank you.
I see that my time has run out. I thank the court for their time.
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. Mr. Hewitt, you saved 31 seconds of your time.
31 seconds. I think what needs to be clear, Your Honors, is that the average here is 1875, not 1822. Ritley clearly says, my average is, after reviewing everybody, is 1875. He then says, because it's BP is 16, I'm lowering it down to 1822. There's no explanation for that. Consider the economic conditions in 97. You had single-digit vacancy rates for Class A space. In short, you've got a landlord's market. In a landlord's market, you're not giving away the store by $16 a square foot for any space not in the BP tower. Because there's no explanation, we would submit that there's error. We again have argued that you have the basis to modify the report. We request that you do so. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.